A long-awaited aid convoy has finally arrived in the Syrian city of Madaya. 40,000 people in a city controlled by Syrian rebels but surrounded by armed militia loyal to the regime of Bashar al-Assad. Madaya is near the Lebanese border. There are government checkpoints guarding all of the approaches, and the Iranian-backed militia Hezbollah has been blockading the city since July. Pictures of civilians trapped without aid or food, emaciated adults and children, lethargic from lack of nutrition and weak from scavenging for food, have become a call to action for the international community. Salia Hassan is an emergency room doctor and journalist who has provided medical care to Syrian victims in Aleppo. She's been monitoring the situation in Madaya. She joins us now. What's your key worry about this convoy now that it's moved?
My key worry is, will it be enough for the amount of people that it has to provide for? And what is the aid? We're reading that it's enough food to last 40,000 people for a month. But then what happens after that month? And as you've described, the conditions of these people is malnutrition and starvation even. The UN has said that it has received credible reports of people dying of starvation. So not only is food going to be important here, but it's how people are refed. It's how you medically treat these people, because this is now a medical condition. You can't just throw food at these people. They're going to need careful refeeding. And it's not just the adults, it's children. Children are a speciality on their own. How are the pediatric patients who are patients now, they are malnourished children, how are they going to be cared for? That's my main concern. It's not just about opening the gates of this besieged town and letting in some trucks. This requires a lot of careful attention and a lot of careful support, not just letting in some trucks. They let some trucks in December and earlier on in October, and we've got these horrific pictures.
How would you say the infrastructure for greeting these trucks is equipped to deal with this, if at all? And how has the international humanitarian community complicated efforts to get aid into the center of this village?
What was really shocking to learn as the pictures began to emerge was that this area had been besieged since July, and aid had got in earlier on in October and in December, and yet it clearly wasn't sufficient. And this aid was part of the agreements that had been arranged previously. I know that there'd been UN resolutions on aid to besieged areas in Syria, and consequently it must be noted that when the UN sat to come to a decision on humanitarian aid in Syria, a number of times these votes had been vetoed by China and Russia on humanitarian aid. We're talking about humanitarian aid. It took a long time to come to a joint agreement on just humanitarian aid for the Syrian civilian people on how it should be distributed. So what we've had now under this UN resolution on how aid should be delivered, we have areas where people are starving to death. And the other thing that, as I was going back to what I said earlier, the shocking fact is that this area had been under siege since July, and that international agencies like the ICRC were aware. We have been seeing reports from ICRC spokespersons about what they'd witnessed late last year, December, November 2015, and that they were aware of these images. I know it's difficult for NGOs such as ICRC to make what they find public, because it then threatens their own access, but what was going on within their own circles to make sure that more aid could get in? Let's be clear about this. The reason why we've got this besieged town getting aid now, 40,000 people getting food for a month now, is because we've seen those horrific pictures.
Indeed.
And that has put pressure on people. What if we hadn't? And I want to go back to the brave people who sent those pictures out, because those pictures and those phone calls came from people living within that besieged town. It didn't come from anyone else. It came from them. And they've taken a huge risk. It just goes to show how terrible their lives are when they feel that they've got nothing, absolutely nothing else to lose now, other than, because you know, this is a besieged town. Who's around it? Government forces. What's going to happen if you raise your hand up above the parapet and make yourself known as speaking out? You're putting yourself at risk. You're putting a great big target sign on your head. So how are these people going to be treated now, and how can we ensure their safety?
What do you make of the claims from the Syrian government that the humanitarian situation in Madaya is overblown and being exaggerated by opposition groups? And do you think this situation is being replicated in other towns and cities around Syria?
Number one, what the Syrian government says, I know credible faith in whatsoever. And I can take that from a very personal stance. When I was in Syria myself, working in a hospital for Saving Syria's Children, when a Soviet-made thermal bomb was dropped on a school nearby, and I dealt with a number of very severely injured children, the claim that was put out by the media related to the Syrian authorities was that that was a hoax and that we dressed children up to look burnt. So number one, I don't take anything that the Syrian authorities put out at all as truthful. And the other thing that fills me with horror is that this is one town that managed to get the pictures out. But we know there are 15 other areas that are besieged, and they haven't been able to get the pictures out. What on earth is going on there?
Saliha Hassan is an emergency room doctor who's provided medical care to Syrian refugees in Aleppo and has been monitoring the situation in Madaya and other places around besieged Syria. Saliha, thanks so much.
Thank you.